Samson spun another preposterous tale. He tells Delilah that the secret of his strength lies in how his hair could be groomed. If she would weave the 7 locks of his hair with the web and tighten these locks with the pin, he would magically become weak. The Bible is full of stories that we all know and love. But how well do we know them? The answer might surprise you. The Bible you thought you knew is going to dive deep into the exquisite details of the biblical stories that make them fascinating and transforming. In this week's podcast, we will conclude the Samson story. So far, we have observed an ostensive Israelite hero virtually devoid of any redeeming moral qualities. The man is selfish, impulsive, socially inept, short-tempered, devious, callous, disrespectful, and vengeful. Even his communication with God is dubious. Yet that same God, the Israelite God, has used Samson to punish the Philistines for their domination of Israel. If we think this final chapter of Samson's story, Judges chapter 16 to be specific, will eventuate in a man who finally gets his act together, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment. He will indeed be the instrument through which God devastates the Philistines. But this final episode underscores the comic tragedy that defines this notorious biblical anti-hero. At the outset of this concluding chapter, we are told that Samson went to Gaza. That was one of the famous 5 Philistine cities. If we figured that Samson was on a mission to continue to punish the Philistines, we are sorely mistaken. Once again, Samson has sex on his mind. Once in Gaza, he saw a prostitute and had sex with her. That's in verse 1 of chapter 16. Apparently, he was not the least bit discreet, for word got out immediately that Samson was in Gaza and he was sleeping with a prostitute. The Philistines could not let an opportunity pass by to make Samson pay for all the damage he had so far caused in their country. So they surrounded the place where Samson and the woman were. The Philistine strategy for dealing with Samson was simple. They would wait in the gate of the city until morning and kill Samson when he emerged. That's in verse 2. Their ploy was hardly subtle. A man who was spending the night with a prostitute would be exhausted in the morning. If anything could neutralize Samson's legendary strength, surely this was it. Perhaps Samson has tempted fate for the last time. But Samson smelled a rat. He did not wait until morning to leave the prostitute. Instead, he got up at midnight and planned his escape. Incredibly, he took hold of the doors of the city gate and the posts that secured them. Then he proceeded to use sheer force to rip these posts out of the ground, hoist the doors and posts onto his shoulders, and carry this unbelievable load off to the top of a hill near Hebron. That's in verse 3. Hebron, by the way, was an Israelite town about 40 miles from Gaza. Samson's stamina and strength were displayed most graphically that evening. He apparently did not need any testosterone supplements. Had the Philistine gang waiting to pounce on Samson slept through all this? The text does not say. Either they were sleeping and did not awake from the noise Samson was making, something you'll recall that happened when Samson killed the lion without his parents being aware of it, or they were awake, saw with her own eyes what Samson was doing, and concluded that they were no match for this ancient version of the Incredible Hulk. In any case, Samson was once more right under the proverbial Philistine nose, but he got away in a most dazzling manner. One might have thought that in light of this latest adventure, Samson was through with Philistine women, but nothing deterred this man. The next thing we know, he finds himself loving a Philistine woman in the Valley of Sorek, a place that served as an entry into Philistine territory. That's in verse 4. The woman's name was Delilah. This is the first Philistine character who is named in these four chapters detailing Samson's exploits. Again, Samson evidently did not care whether anyone knew about his liaison with Delilah. Indeed, Philistine lords, officials of some sort, somehow knew about this relationship right away. Now desperate, these men go to Delilah and ask her to find out the secret of Samson's strength. That's in verse 5. There must be some weakness to this man who is causing our country such consternation. If Delilah learns this secret, each of the lords will fork over to her 1,100 pieces of silver. This would quite likely set up Delilah for the rest of her life. Though the narrator lets us know that Samson loved Delilah, we are not told how Delilah felt about him. She seems not to have hesitated in the least about learning Samson's secret and getting this handsome payoff. In fact, she went right to work on the project. She could not have been more obvious about her intentions. The next time she is with Samson, she asks him what the source of his strength happens to be. That's in verse 6. But she does not leave it at that. Instead, she elaborates, "What would one do to be able to bind you and subdue you?" It was one thing to be curious about her boyfriend's uncommon strength. It was a completely different matter to come right out and say, in effect, that people are looking to tie you up and overpower you. Either Samson was so dumb or infatuated that he did not figure out what Delilah was concocting, or he decided to play along with her little game. One way or another, though, what he told his girlfriend was a bald-faced lie. "Anyone who ties me up with 7 fresh bowstrings will make me as weak as any other man." That's in verse 7. Delilah bought Samson's story and immediately acquired 7 bowstrings that had not been dried. That's verse 8. Inexplicably, she managed to tie up Samson with these bowstrings. Presumably, he was sleeping at the time, or perhaps pretending to be sleeping. One way or the other, though, she bound her boyfriend with these fresh bowstrings. That was only part of her plot, however. Delilah had Philistine men hiding out in a nearby room. Again, incredulously, Samson was unaware of these men in the same house in an adjacent room, or he pretended to be unaware. At this opportune moment, Delilah announced, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." That's in verse 9. With no problem at all, Samson snapped these bowstrings like it was nothing. This demonstrated that Samson was as strong as ever and that the secret of his strength had not been revealed. We are not told what the reaction of the Philistine men was when Samson performed yet another feat of extraordinary strength. Had they remained in the room and got out as soon as they saw Samson untying himself so easily? Or had they scurried off as fast as they could when they realized that Samson retained his power? In any case, Samson once again frustrated a Philistine effort to get the best of him. Absurdly, this did not make Samson sour on his relationship to his Philistine girlfriend. In the very next scene, she accuses him of having mocked her and having lied to her. Objectively, of course, she was exactly right. That's in verse 10. At the same time, it seems not to have occurred to Delilah that she had set him up so that the Philistines in the other room could capture him. Her duplicity did not count. Does this second scene also suggest that the men had not shown themselves in the previous incident? Maybe we are being too logical, because what happens defies common sense. Samson responds to Delilah's complaints about his mocking her and lying to her by telling her another whopper. He points out that being tied up with brand new ropes that have never been used would render him as weak as any other man. That's in verse 11. Delilah takes the bait this second time. She binds Samson with new ropes and instantly cries out, quote, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." That's in verse 12. Though the Philistines were in the adjoining room, they are unable to press any advantage because Samson snapped the ropes as if they were threads. This is the second time Delilah has tried to deliver her boyfriend to his enemies. The second time Philistine men were hiding out in the next room, and the second time that Samson has shown that he is as strong as ever. As well, we are left once more to guess what the men did. Had they left quickly and quietly when they saw Samson snap the ropes, or had they been ready to pounce but get out as fast as possible when he confronted them? Either scene is almost farcical. Delilah must have figured that her Israelite boyfriend did not have a brain in his head. So, for the third time, she asked him about the sources of his strength, again reminding him that he was a serial mocker and a serial liar. That's in verse 13. Samson returned the favor by treating Delilah as though she did not have a brain in her head. Twice she had implored him for information. Twice he had lied through his teeth to her. And twice he had thwarted the Philistines from subduing him. Samson must have been astounded that Delilah never once figured that he realized she was betraying him. With both of them operating as though the stupidity of their partner could not be exaggerated, Samson spun another preposterous tale. He tells Delilah that the secret of his strength lies in how his hair could be groomed. If she would weave the 7 locks of his hair with the web and tighten these locks with the pin, he would magically become weak. By now, it is hardly surprising that Delilah immediately acted on this new information. As Samson slept, she took care of his hair according to what he had told her. That's in verse 14. Then, as before, she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." You guessed it. For the third time, Samson revealed that he was an expert liar. He took the paraphernalia from his hair and remained his old, strong self. This time, the Philistine men in the next room are not even mentioned. This has become a story worthy of Monty Python. For Samson and Delilah, the fourth time was the charm. Delilah argued that Samson could not possibly love her since he had lied to her 3 times. That's in verse 15. The lies had mocked her terribly. Her complicity in trying to deliver Samson to the Philistines on a silver platter did not figure in her equation. All the fault was placed at Samson's feet. This fourth time around, however, did not end with a single request. The text informs us that, quote, unquote, day after day, she pressed him hard, all to reveal the secret of his strength. After a while, Samson could not take her persistent hounding any longer. That's in verse 16. So, finally, he relented. This time, he told the truth. He admitted that his hair had never been cut because he has been a Nazarite to God since birth. Keep in mind that a Nazarite is someone who follows very strict habits as a way of showing devotion to God. Samson had nothing so far to demonstrate religious sincerity, but apparently he had kept his Nazarite vows. Should his hair be cut, he allowed, he would revert to being an ordinary man. That's in verse 17. Now, intuiting that Samson had been truthful, Delilah got in touch with the Philistine lords, tell them that she had the goods on Samson. At once they came to her, bringing the money that they had promised for this valuable information. That's in verse 18. Then, inducing Samson to take a nap, she had a man sneak in and cut off her boyfriend's hair, all 7 locks. That's in verse 19. At this point, she began to torment him just as his strength was leaving him. Delilah woke him up with her familiar refrain, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." Unfazed and still confident in his ability to escape, Samson awoke and casually got ready to leave. But this time was different. Ominously, Samson did not realize that the Lord had left him. That's in verse 20. Samson was now on his own. He was no longer able to combat the Philistines. So they seized him, gouged out his eyes, and brought him to Gaza in bronze chains. That's in verse 21. Once in Gaza, Samson was treated like a beast of burden. He was forced to grind grain in the mill, a job typically done by an ox. This brash, roguish man, who had done whatever came into his mind to make Philistine life miserable, had been transformed by his enemies into a pitiful prisoner who had to walk monotonously and arduously in endless circles, making the grinding stone do its intended work. While he engaged in this mindless work, though, his hair began to grow once again. The Philistine success at capturing Samson and subsequently humiliating him was also seen as a religious accomplishment. From a Philistine perspective, their God had enabled them to achieve this great victory. As a consequence, it was appropriate for them to offer a sacrifice to their god, Dagon. That's in verse 23. The Philistine population, or at least a bunch of them, came out for this festive event, praising their deity for giving Samson to them, for this Israelite had virtually ravaged their country. That's in verse 24. Of course, religious festivities often involved other features of celebration, including a touch of the grape. Feeling the effects of the alcohol, some in the crowd thought it would be a great idea to parade Samson around for their own amusement. Would that not be a delicious way of rubbing salt into Samson's wound? How grand it would be to see this once arrogant man grovel in the presence of Philistines. So, Samson was trotted out of prison so that he could make sport for the Philistines. Making sport may suggest a forced dance of some kind. That's in verse 25. In any case, the Philistines were having a grand time at Samson's expense. Unfortunately for the Philistines, however, They also made Samson stand near the pillars of the building in which they were having this party. It turns out that that was a disastrous idea. Because Samson was now blind, he was led around by a lad. Samson asked this lad to do him a favor. He wanted the lad to help him know where the pillars were so that he could lean on them and get a little rest. That's what he told the lad. That's in verse 26. The lad complied with this request. At this juncture, the narrator lets us know that the Philistine crowd was impressive. The lords of the Philistines were there. Besides these dignitaries, about 3,000 others were present. They were all there being immensely amused by Samson. That's in verse 27. This was no small gathering. Indeed, since the lords were there, one may infer that many in this group had important roles to play in Philistine affairs, social and political. After describing the Philistines at this gathering, the narrator turns back to Samson. Uncharacteristically, he is praying. That's in verse 28. He asks the Lord to remember him and strengthen him. His prayer is minimal. Samson wants to recover his strength one last time. He is not ashamed of making this prayer absolutely personal. He wants to avenge the loss of his two eyes. Even in this circumstance, Samson thinks primarily of himself. Without waiting for an answer to his prayer, Samson grasped the two pillars supporting the immense house where he had been making sport. That's in verse 29. Clearly, the Philistines had erred in letting Samson near these pillars, and the lad had made a serious mistake by leading him right to them. It turned out to be a fatal mistake. Samson realized that what he was about to do would end his own life, but he did not care. That's in verse 30. Using all his might, he leaned into the pillars so that the house collapsed on everyone who was there, including the lords, and obviously including Samson. The final calculation is grim. In this last action, Samson managed to kill more Philistines while dying than he did while alive. Considering how many he had previously killed, that was no insignificant feat. The only thing left for Samson was his burial, something that was taken care of by his brothers and all his family. He was interred in Manoach's tomb between Zorah and Eshtaol. Manoach was, of course, his father. The story concludes with the notice that he had judged Israel for 20 years, just as we had been told once before. That's in chapter 15, verse 29, and chapter 16, verse 31. In the three chapters in the book of Judges featuring Samson, the man does not deviate from playing to type. He is consistently self-centered, aggrandizing, insufferable, misogynistic, tone-deaf, mean-spirited, and generally disagreeable. This does not change even when he is praying or calling on God. In this last episode, in his final efforts to punish the Philistines, he remains selfish. He kills himself and thousands of Philistines not to execute divine justice, not finally to do God's will, not to liberate Israel from Philistine domination. His main concern is avenging his two eyes. The character evinces absolutely no growth throughout the narrative. He is never chastened or driven to reflection or compelled to reassess his priorities or reconsider his relationship to his God. Yet inexplicably, God used this non-sympathetic character to deal with the Philistines. Was that the best person Israel had to offer? Do we flatter ourselves by thinking of ourselves as morally and spiritually superior to the likes of Samson? Does this story underscore that God sometimes plays against type, using rogues, connivers, liars, and terribly flawed people rather than saints, prophets, priests, sages, and the like? Does this story force us to rethink what a saint truly is? Since saints are people, what makes us think they are without flaws? Compared to Israel, what made the Philistines so bad? These and other nagging questions are prompted when we pay attention to the details of this amazing, incredible story of Samson in the book of Judges. Once again, let me encourage you to go to my website, faspina.com, and put your email there so I have a way to contact you. And also ask any questions you have so I can answer them in a subsequent podcast, and that is at fspina106@gmail.com. Thank you. I want to thank you so very much for listening to The Bible You Thought You Knew. I have a question for you. Do you have a question or topic that you'd like me to cover on the podcast? If so, all you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do two simple things. One, leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. Two, in that review, ask anything you want related to the Bible. That's all you have to do. Then, listen in to hear your question answered on a future episode. Join us next time on The Bible You Thought You Knew, when we discuss Jesus' personal Bible. God bless.